A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 142. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Last Enemy. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This was a 2008 BBC miniseries with some funding from WGBH Boston PBS as well. And it was a political thriller that was set in a futuristic version of London that went into sort of spy-fi, spy and science fiction territories, with London having this sort of futuristic surveillance and sort of information analysis system running that tracks everyone and allows for some unusual things with restriction of motion and so on.
That's right. And it's that those elements of a futuristic London, not that far from our own, with this total information awareness security system and this sort of mixture of spy tech and security tech. It's that sort of thing that makes it fit into the British Invaders genre just about, because a large part of it, as you probably will have gathered from our last episode, is the sort of conspiracy thriller that's going on as well.
That's right. But we do have something that is sort of unveiled as we go through the course of the show, where you get more and more of the idea of what these tools that the government has put in place do and how they will be used. And that brings us more into this sort of science fiction and dystopian type of fiction that's quite interesting.
Yes, it is interesting. And as we say, there's quite a bit of it going on. And the plots do indeed thicken as we go deeper into these 5 episodes. So we have the British government reacting to a terrorist attack by pushing ahead with this TIA computer system, which looks at all the databases and all the security cameras and puts everything together. Meanwhile, we've got our main characters, Stephen Ezard, this rather sort of cold, reclusive mathematician, and his dead brother's wife, Yasim, looking into the death of Michael Ezard, his brother, trying to find out what actually happened, because not all is as it seems when we first encountered him at the funeral.
That's right. And as these things are going on, there is also something about tests of a new hepatitis B vaccine and what may be happening with that, and a group of refugees who are on the run. And possibly there may be a deadly infection that is involved with this as well. And there are a number of these elements that are sort of quite unclear and sort of develop as we go along.
That's right. As you say, lots of little sort of plot strands going on. And it's a sort of question as to who will uncover the truth first, who will be able to put all this together in some form of sense that makes sense to them and to us as the viewer. We've got Stephen and Yasim, and Stephen having the advantage of being able to use the TIA system himself for his own investigations. He's supposed to be testing it for the government, but in fact, I think he's using it mostly just to help him with his search, really, for what happened to his brother.
Yes, they're quite clear that he's using it for his own means, aren't they?
They are, actually. And it is slightly surprising that he gets away with that for so long when he's supposed to just be testing and approving the system. But there you go. But while Stephen and Yasim are searching for the truth, we have the government. We have these shadowy government figures who seem to be trying to find out something that's going on, or maybe they're trying to cover it up. Maybe they're actually trying to conceal the evidence of the mystery around the infection and the new vaccine that you've mentioned, Brian. And then on top of that, we've got Robert Carlyle's sort of rogue MI5 agent who appears to be acting independently. And we don't find out what his agenda is for some time into this story.
That's right. And as these different groups of people are trying to find out what's going on, they are also trying to find out what each other knows and what each other group is doing and following each other. So there's this quite involved web of things going on here.
And in perhaps even further confusion, because as well as Robert Carlyle going around as a man in black sort of spook, we've got another man in black, another sinister figure who's going around and basically killing off witnesses and various people involved in these plot threads, and frankly making us a bit more confused about what's going on, Brian.
Yes, there are a lot of layers and a lot of different things going on here. And we have more ideas involved. We have the general ideas of the future of the UK after this terrorist attack, and that's sort of leading to a very heavy police presence and, you know, heavily armed and armored, you know, helmet-wearing police presence. And they have these optional ID cards that people have been issued with. And you have this idea that having this type of ID card and being tracked with this ID card is something that's optional. So, you know, people don't need to get them. But it becomes more and more that you do need to have one of these official ID cards if you, for example, want to enter a building on a university campus or a government building. More and more things actually require these ID cards as things go on.
And of course, probably at the time that this was being written for the screen by Peter Berry, we had the subject of ID cards was very much prominent in sort of UK politics at the time. Now, of course, it's sort of gone away a bit since then, partly because of the costs of introducing it and the problems with the IT system. But it was very, so I think, very current at the time that this was where the UK was going, that we were going to have an ID card system with these heavily armoured police basically stopping people in the street and asking to see their cards and plugging them into some sort of card reader, which tells them everything about the person straight away. And then on top of that, we've got the surveillance cameras everywhere. Of course, that, unfortunately, is very true and current in modern-day England. But it's more so in this series. There really is a camera on every corner, and all the feeds can be analysed by this total information awareness system. And it can do things like tracking car registration plates so that they can follow and track a vehicle as it moves around. And then we've got at the border control, we've got iris recognition scans for everybody. Now, they're slowly being introduced here for passport control, but in this program, it's already happened. We've got iris recognition scans to actually get into the country.
Yes, you have these ideas of movements being restricted first in and out of the country, and then more and more for different places. You know, only certain people can enter certain buildings. You know, things gradually becoming more and more restrictive and introducing sort of more and more of these police state types of ideas. And of course, this is all brought together by TIA, the Total Information System. And it can track a person's financial activity, where they live, their movements, and so on. And as we say, introduces all these limitations. You know, what purchases are you allowed to make? If you don't have one, are you allowed to purchase things at all? Which types of buildings are you allowed to enter? Things that otherwise might be public buildings. So you get lots of these ideas of how these sorts of ID and surveillance type things can gradually become more and more restrictive on what people can do.
And it's it is, as we've suggested, it is all quite realistic. We can see that this future is not that far away and not that impossible or improbable. And it is quite scary as well, the way the government use the information in this program, the way they track people and their movements and their purchases and so on. I suppose, Brian, I don't think it's ever mentioned in the television show, but of course it does make us think of George Orwell's 1984, and I suppose for British Invaders, the rather fantastic BBC production of that that we watched from 1954, I believe. So it's got that sort of feel to it. This is almost an Orwellian future.
That's right, and it's very much tying the idea of this is where we are now. Is this where we might be going?
And as we've said, this was the future that Peter Berry thought we were drifting towards without really understanding. And it may be that we've backed off from that slightly in the last few years since this production. But it's interesting stuff to look at.
Absolutely.
The Victoria bomb, you'd have felt the shockwaves of that one all the way to China. It changed the way a lot of people thought.
Those that could think for themselves.
An atrocity on that scale. People weren't prepared to live with that level of insecurity anymore. That's where we can help.
We're in the national database business. And this is the future of that business. Now, any expansion of the National Register or DNA databases has always had the anxiety brigade jumping up and down.
So we were left with national databases that didn't talk to each other. In truth, everyone knew it was only a matter of time before they did. The Victoria bomb and the others just hurried the inevitable along. Well, here she is, the intrusive state machine.
So I think this brings us nicely into our own take on this. What did we think of it? So, Eamon, what did you like about The Last Enemy?
Well, let's talk about the look of the production. It is quite a big budget production. We've said it was a joint funding with WGBH in Boston. And so the result is it looks good. The locations are good. The sets are very good. We get some big budget explosions as we go through. So I think the look of it is quite good, Brian. I don't know what you felt about that.
Yes, it did have a very nice look to it and has in some ways a feature film style look to it in parts of it anyhow. I will also say that the performances in this were pretty strong across the board. I don't think there were any actors that sort of jumped out as being not very good or sort of the weak part of it. I think across the board, it was a pretty strong cast for this.
It is a fairly astonishing cast to look at it now. I mean, in the front cover of the DVD set, we've got Robert Carlyle, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Max Beasley staring out at us. But even when we get down to the sort of government officials and the politicians and the spooks, we've got well-recognised, very capable actors right the way through. So, yeah, the cast is very good. We've got Benedict Cumberbatch before he hits the big time, going on to play, I suppose, another sort of genius role in his interpretation of Sherlock. Robert Carlyle, very menacing as this sort of rogue agent whose purpose and agenda we sort of are struggling to find out. So, yeah. Performances all round, very good, I think.
That's right. We have some more minor roles with some very good people in them, too, with Christopher Fulford, I think, doing a very good job in this. And we even have David Calder, who I, of course, remember from Star Cops many years ago. But he has a minor role in this, but is sort of just right for that role in the government as well.
So good stuff. We've got the writing. I don't know what you felt about the writing of this show, Brian.
I thought it was reasonably good. It was, it definitely moves, and there is definitely a lot of material to fill out this. I think it's between 5 and 6 hours of basically one long story. So I think the writing does things reasonably well. It does get to be convoluted at times. There are so many different threads of things happening that it's the sort of thing where you think, wow, that's really good. Now I need to watch it again to understand it.
Yes, it is a bit like that. I mean, the portrayal of this slightly futuristic London with the scary, paranoid stuff about surveillance, I thought that was very well written and very well handled. But as you say, some of the plot threads are convoluted. It does take quite a while for Stephen Ezard to figure out what's going on, and he's the mathematical genius, so it takes us a bit longer than him to actually work out what it is. So I did find it confusing and rather complex, and perhaps there were, you know, slightly too many plots that the writer tried to squeeze in there all at one go.
Yes, that may be the biggest weakness of this, is that there are just so many different pieces going on. And at times, some of the pieces are not as well explained or as clear as they should be. It sort of gets a little bit muddy in some ways. I would have liked to have seen some of the pacing in parts of it be spaced out a little bit more, rather than having the running along intensity. It would have been nice to have a bit more of a simmer to it in some places. But all in all, for the type of show it is, I think those things work pretty well.
Okay. We should point out that, as ever, we discussed this on our Facebook page. And I'll mention that Gordon pointed out that it was interesting for the show to run with a non-stereotypical lead. Stephen Ezard, I think, is not the normal sort of action hero for this sort of conspiracy spy-fi drama. So that's an interesting take that the writer took. And actually, I think that works quite well.
Yes. It was the fish out of water type of character, and I think he did that very well, and I think that that was a very good approach for this. I also like the fact that we have this sort of very gradual unveiling of exactly what this future looks like and exactly how bad things have become. You know, it starts with at the beginning, you know, so there are some cameras around, you know, they can see where people are, to then, well, how much information do they actually have about people? Well, it's maybe more than we thought, and then it becomes more and more restrictive. And by the end of the show, there are some fairly serious Orwellian type aspects where certain people are classified that they have limited movements and limited access to some things, but oh, it won't be so much that you'll notice it most of the time. So that sort of gradual unveiling of things I thought was very well done.
Yes, there is a slow build on that, and as you say, if anything, the London towards the end of this show is even more scary than the London at the start. So there is some stuff to be revealed along the way.
Yes, absolutely. So we've mentioned a little bit of the what we liked and were not quite as satisfied with. What did you think of the medical side of this, Eamon? There certainly was some in there.
Yes, there is a medical mystery going on, and there are various people breaking into medical facilities to take important blood samples and so on. And actually, for the most part, I would say here, with my Doctor Watch hat on, that the medicine portrayed is very good. It looks pretty accurate. There's some slight confusion about vaccines, and in particular about how they're administered, but I can forgive that. No, the rest of it, I think actually the medicine, pretty convincing. It gets a thumbs up from me.
Interesting.
But of course, I can also bounce back that question to you, Brian, because here we have quite a bit of IT on display, particularly with the Total Information Awareness System, and we have Stephen using computers quite a lot. What did you think of the IT portrayal in this show?
All in all, it was pretty good. There were a couple of mistakes here and there about how they were doing things with passwords and encryption and the like. There were a couple things that were clearly done for plot reasons and didn't quite work in terms of technology and the ideas there. The Total Information Awareness System itself was pretty good. All the principles of what it did and sort of what it was based on were pretty accurate. It was pretty good. Some of the details, how they explain things, were not that great. I thought there there was a bit of a missed opportunity in the moments where they describe TIA and sort of say what it is and what it does, where they could have sort of alluded to some information retrieval ideas and some clustering and pattern matching ideas that they sort of didn't really get to, and sort of said something about how many queries it does that were a little bit fudging it in the explanations. But all in all, the principles of it, the fundamentals of what the TIA system was and what it was doing, pretty reasonable for something that that you could envision doing that and working in that general way in the not too distant future.
Okay. You may have spotted that Brian does indeed work with IT.
I do, yes.
I suppose the one problem with the IT that I particularly picked up on, but I know you noticed as well, was quite how long the government would have let Stephen Ezard misuse the TIA system for.
Yes, I sort of got the feeling that they were letting him do that so they could see what he was doing with it and figure out what he was doing. But it did seem a bit of a stretch, even with that. And he seemed to be perfectly accepting that they were giving him all of this latitude as well, which seemed a little bit surprising. At one point, he asks to be able to use TIA with all of the tracking of what he's doing turned off, and he sort of accepts that they're willing to offer that to him, and that seemed a little bit of a stretch to me.
Okay. Were there any other elements of this show that you had problems with that we haven't already mentioned?
I don't think so, and in the whole, it was pretty solid.
Okay, so I guess that brings us neatly into how we're going to recommend this to our listeners, whether we suggest they do actually go and watch the episodes themselves or even get hold of it. What are you going to say, Brian? How are you going to start us off?
I will give this a recommendation. I'll say it's a good show. It's a fun watch. It probably isn't on my list of classics or things that will become classic, but it's a very good thriller with some futuristic stuff in it. So I would say it's definitely worth watching and sort of a nice sort of look at what people were thinking in the time it was made, where in this case, the time it was made, it was actually quite recent. So I would say, yes, it's a good show. It's worth watching. So check it out.
Okay. It certainly, as you say, is not a classic, nor is it destined, I think, to be a cult classic. I find it a slightly tricky one. Certainly, if I was looking to buy a DVD set, I probably wouldn't buy this one. I would, if you want Benedict Cumberbatch, buy Sherlock. And if you want Max Beasley, I would buy the remake of Survivors. But as it's available free, courtesy of WGBH or the Public Broadcasting Service, it's free on YouTube. So yes, I will give it a cautious recommendation. If you've got the time, it's got some interesting elements. Go and check it out. But as ever, we would like to know what you think about this show, and in particular, if you saw it when it first came out, or if you've seen it as a result of our reviews, please do get in touch and let us know.
Absolutely. So, in summary, The Last Enemy was a story that looks at a futuristic, near-future version of London where surveillance technology and ID card tracking technology have become much more intense and much more aggressive in tracking people's motions and restricting what people are allowed to do and where they are allowed to go. It follows Stephen Ezard and a number of other characters in trying to discover what is happening in London with the TIA system and with a number of other things, including a medical mystery and some things with vaccines and refugees and things going on in Afghanistan. And through all of this, Stephen Ezard is coming back to London for the first time in many years and learning about the changes and how things are different now from how they used to be.
Very good. That made more sense to me that way, Brian. So, a very serious show we've been discussing, but we would like you to come back next time when we'll be discussing a show that is not in any way serious, Brian.
It will be a bit of a contrast to this one, yes.
Quite a change as we jump to an ITV cartoon series that ran from 1981 to 1992. He's the greatest. He's fantastic. He is Danger Mouse.
Definitely something different than I believe the first time we'll be doing a discussion about a cartoon series.
Absolutely, and it's going to be something different, so please do come back and join us for that one, or jump in on the various sites and let us know what you think about Danger Mouse.
Yes, should be fun stuff. So, you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. We are on the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to TheGeekCultureNetwork.com, you can find us there. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group as well.
And if you're into internet streaming radio, you can find many geek culture or geek-related shows on VOG Network, where you'll also find ourselves, the British Invaders Show. And as ever, if you're listening to us on VOG Network, welcome, and hop over to the VOG Network forums, where hopefully the British Invaders Forum will now be active.
Yes, absolutely. Some good stuff there too as well. So, thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, logging off.